Animal shelters everywhere take in unwanted puppies, kittens, dogs, cats, and other critters. The hope, of course, is to find each animal a good forever home. Today, we'll talk about what makes a good forever home. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The Animal Rescue League of Des Moines has just released two new books, For Love of Dogs and For Love of Cats. Each book is designed to help you pick the right pet for your family and to help you understand and train your pet so you can be happy ever after. Today, I'll talk with Tom Colvin, director of the Animal Rescue League, Carol Grillion, who specializes in cat behavior, and Paula Sunday, who specializes in dog behavior. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Between 5 and 7 million unwanted pets wind up at animal shelters in the United States every year. Every shelter and rescue group out there works hard to find homes for these animals. And the goal is not just to find a home, but a good home, and to make sure that that relationship will last for the lifetime of the animal. The Animal Rescue League of Des Moines has just released two new books, For Love of Dogs and For Love of Cats. Each book is designed to help you pick the right pet for your family and to help you understand and train your pet so that your home can be a happy forever home. And with me today is Tom Colvin, director of the Animal Rescue League. Hi, Tom.
How are you, Charity?
I'm very good. Nice to talk to you again. Carol yes. Grillion is also here. She's the president of the board of directors for the ARL, and she's also a cat behavior expert. Hi, Carol.
Hello, Charity.
Welcome back. And Paula Sunday is here as well. She's the resident dog expert at the Animal Rescue League. Hi, Paula.
Hi, how you doing?
Great. And throughout the hour, we'll be talking about the things that you guys have written about in these books, but we also want to take your calls and your questions as well. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Tom, what was the idea behind writing these books?
You know, we just had so many questions so often. And, you know, I think as our experts will be talking about here a little bit later on, a lot of the calls that we got about how do I successfully live with my pet? I may love my pet, but I really abhor some of the things that they do. And some of those situations were pretty recurring. So one of the things we were hoping to do is to put it into book form and let people just kind of run through and see if we can actually keep those pets in their homes, which is certainly one of our goals.
You know, there are a lot of particularly dog training books out there. There are fewer books about cats, but there are still some books mm-hmm. about cats out there. What were some of the questions that you guys were getting over and over again that you didn't feel were addressed in other places?
Well, I think that one of the things that we just didn't feel was addressed was the reasons why people turn their pets into shelters. And that's something that all three of us have so vested our time and efforts into is prevention. And so that's really what the books are about, is helping people prevent the idea that they can break that bond, that the pet is expendable, that they're just done. And we can't do that at the shelter as much, because once people have actually decided to turn the pet in, they really can't hear us anymore. So we wanted to get out in front of that, and we thought the books were a great way to get at least a stepping stone in that direction.
Well, let's start with cats. And what mm-hmm. are most of the reasons that you hear when cats are brought into the Animal Rescue League and are being surrendered? What are the reasons that you hear?
Well, one of the main reasons we always hear is litter box. The cat quit using its litter box, and so they turn into a shelter because they don't want the cat, you know, misusing their litter box around their house. And, you know, just to speak to that particular issue, that is a very fixable issue. Usually, if it's not a health issue, it's usually absolutely something related to the litter box itself, whether it be the location of the box, the kind of the litter, the, you know, how often it's cleaned. I mean, there's 10 reasons why, main categories. And so litter box is definitely fixable for
right.
us.
And we'll dig into that,
yep.
so to speak,
yep.
a little bit further later on. You spend a lot of time in the book writing about that. But what's sort of some of the other reasons?
aggression. People think that their cats are being aggressive with them, whether it ends up being play aggression or not. New baby in the house. So they're, you know, believing that that's going to be a problem to have a new child and a cat at the same time. Or they've gotten a second cat or a third cat, and it's not getting along with the other cats in their house. And so they get rid of the one that they view to be the troublemaker versus work on those relationships. So I think those four reasons are probably the main reasons we get the cats turned into the shelter.
And Paula, what are some of the reasons that we hear about dogs?
Well, there's a difference between the reasons that they give and the reasons that we really think are the problem, because I think the number one reason that people give for dogs especially is moving. But we all know people that move with their pets, move with their dogs. A friend of mine moved to Germany with her dog. So it's so doable, but yet it's a kind of an easy way for people to use a way to tell the shelter is like, well, it's not my fault, I have to move. So I feel most of those things and most of the reasons that people turn in dogs to the shelter, puppies, dogs, at any time in their lives, most of the time is there's a behavior issue that people don't know how to solve.
So no matter what they say, to be what the
I'm not calling
is.
You a liar, but no matter what you say, I think it's some behavior that you can't deal with.
All right. Well, the place that you start in both of these books, and I'm sure you've all done a great deal of work on this at the Animal Rescue League, is with helping people select the right pet for their home. Tom, what's the first thing that people need to think about when they think, you know, I want to add a pet to my household?
Well, we always recommend charity that they kind of do a home assessment and, you know, think about their lifestyle. What are they, active people? Are they couch potatoes? Are they, financially? Can they take on maybe a pet that requires more expense, less expense? You know, what do they actually have for resources before they even start looking? Because I tell you, once you go into an animal shelter like the Animal Rescue League or go online and take a look at animals in rescues, you're going to fall in love very quick and very often. So it's best to come really knowing whether you what type of pet you're looking for, and then within that structure, knowing specifically what type of pet. And we always recommend that people utilize the staff, the people that actually work with the animals day in and day out, and help them with your selection process, because they're going to know whether these are couch potatoes or ones that really would do better with a lot more activity.
Do you also talk to people about the lifespan of the animal? I mean, I remember in college, of course, there were friends of mine who adopted puppies or kittens when they were in college and weren't really thinking beyond the next 2 years of their lives. Do you talk about, you know, you're at this point in your life and this is the commitment that you're making?
Absolutely, Charity, because, you know, you started this with exactly what we're looking at. We're looking at forever homes, and that's forever of the natural lifetime of the pet. And so, you know, I mean, one of the number one reasons, too, that we're receiving these animals are that people did not make that commitment to start with. It either was a puppy that is no longer cute, kitten that's starting to have a few other types of behavior situations that certainly are fixable, you know, but we're looking for the forever home.
You spend some time in these books, Paula, on different breeds of dogs. Of course, a lot of the dogs at the Animal Rescue League and other rescues around the country are also mutts. Do you think it's important for people to think about dog breed, or is it more dog size?
Well, and both of those things are important. I think that if people have a picture in their head of a dog they've known in the past or they've met, they like the look, then they need to start looking at the size, the lifestyle, and then even in individual breeds, there are such a variety of temperaments within that breed. So you get a litter of, let's just use golden retrievers because people don't know what they are, and there's expectations with golden retrievers that they are perfect with kids, that they are perfect dogs, that they're beautiful, which they are, but in any one litter, there is some that should be professional agility dogs and active and hunting and doing those kinds of things that they were bred to do originally. And then there are those that should be therapy dogs, go into the hospitals, work with children, great family pets. And so, it really depends on the individual dog and how that matches the family's lifestyle.
So when people come into the shelter, how do you help them understand what kind of dog they're looking for?
Well, I guess usually what we do is, at least what I usually do is, if I get a chance to talk to them as they walk in, I'll ask, you know, do you know what you're looking for? And they're like, no, we're just looking. So they'll go through, and that's fine. I like them just to take a walk through and see what's there. And they may fall in love with a pair of brown eyes. And, you know, because there's lots of pretty dogs in there, lots of sweet-looking faces. And so let's get it out. Let's see if there's any history on it. A lot of our dogs are stray, so we don't have a ton of history. And so we kind of see how that matches to what they were looking for. And what kind of worries me is that people come in with a picture in their head, go home with, oh, the opposite kind of a dog. You know, they come in looking for a little furry white thing, and they go out with a black Great Dane kind of deal. And that sometimes it works great, and sometimes they get that dog home and find out how big it really is, and they're going, I mean, we've had dogs returned the same day.
Oh, wow.
Because as big as they are in the shelter, and we get them out, we have them play with them, they have them sit with them, you know, see if they like treats and see if they know sit. But if the dog seems big at the shelter, when you get it home by your own couch, it can seem much bigger. And that can actually kind of alarm people, and they, you know, they'll back out. But and that's okay. You know, I don't want anybody to have the dog that's not right for them.
Right. Well,
that's,
and,
yeah.
You know, shelters have changed a lot in my lifetime and in your experience in mm-hmm. shelters, which, you know, I remember you from long ago in Blackhawk County, Paula.
Yeah.
But, you know, so shelters are a lot friendlier places for the most part. But often the dogs there are frightened, and they may not be acting quite like themselves because they don't really understand what's going on. How do you, as someone who's looking for a pet, how do you evaluate the temperament of a dog that is uncomfortable?
And that's a great question, because you and I both know that the dogs that we see in the shelter can be very, very different after they're in a home for a few days, decompress, you know, get through the stress of it, because it is stressful. No matter how nice the shelter is, and the Animal Rescue League is a beautiful place, but it's still not home. So once an animal gets in with a family, gets in a home, and literally decompresses for a few days, some dogs don't eat, some dogs don't move. And so once that kind of gets adjusted, then they start to see a little bit more about the personality. So it really, in some ways, is, you know, we kind of just, we do the best we can to evaluate the personality of the dog, but we hope for the best.
And Charity, I tell you, if I can just interject real real quick, because you have seen shelters change over the years. And one of the things they're changing too is shelter enrichment and, you know, environments, the building, actual building of shelters now, that certainly go to making the dogs more comfortable, and the cats, certainly the cats too.
Well, and we'll talk about cats in a minute, but I think the way cats are kept at many shelters has changed even more dramatically than dogs.
I agree.
In my lifetime. So we'll talk more about that in just a moment. My guests today are from the Animal Rescue League in Des Moines. They've just put out two new books for love of dogs and for love of cats, in an effort to help people who are adopting animals from shelters create wonderful forever homes for those animals. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about adopting dogs and cats and other pets into your home, but specifically dogs and cats. The Animal Rescue League in Des Moines has put out a couple of new books, one called For Love of Dogs and the other one called For Love of Cats, to help you decide what kind of pet you want to add to your home, to help you figure out which one of the pets available would be the right pet for you, to help you understand that pet, to help you train that pet, and to overcome some of common behavior problems. With me today, Carol Grillion. She is the president of the board of directors of the Animal Rescue League and a cat behavior expert. Paula Sunday is the resident dog expert at the Animal Rescue League. And Tom Colvin is also here. He's director of the Animal Rescue League. And we do want to take your calls as well. You can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Paula, I just want to follow up quickly what we were talking about, evaluating a dog at the shelter. Are there ways you should touch a dog or a puppy before you take them home to get an idea of how comfortable they're going to be with human interactions?
Well, sorry, I think there's a lot of things you can do. You do want to touch to paws. I mean, there's just some things you want to make sure that the dog is comfortable with. It doesn't mean that that can't be fixed if the dog is a little shy about it or worried about it or resistant. But if it raises a lip or gives you, you know, indication that don't do that again or else kind of deal, we need to know about it so that we can help that dog fix that, you know, get more comfortable with that. And we do a lot of that kind of work with the pets that are there, because a lot of the dogs that we get in have not had a great early life. They haven't been well socialized. They haven't been to any sort of classes, and they haven't been handled well. So some of that is kind of a remedial work that we work with these guys on and try and get them caught up.
Right, which is another shift in animal shelters over the years. You seem to have a much greater capability for helping animals overcome some of their behavior problems before they go out again now.
We try to, and then some of it does involve, okay, this is what we've done, and then to the adopter, this is what we'd like you to follow up to do. And that, you know, compliance isn't always great, but if they can do at least a little bit for a little while, lots of times that can make a big difference for the combination, the pet and the owner. Plus, I think that some of that stuff really helps build a bond with the dog, the owner handling, training, working with the dog. I personally think that's where the bond comes.
Sure. And Carol, as Tom was mentioning before the break, there have been so many changes in animal shelters. And I do think the lives of cats have changed so dramatically in animal shelters since I was a kid, because I remember going to the animal shelter and, you know, all the cats were in a sterile metal cage with a litter box, but, you know, by themselves. And now when you go into the Animal Rescue League and many other shelters, they have cat rooms where all of these cats get to interact with each other, and they look so happy.
You know, that's absolutely right, and they sure are. And, you know, I've been in animal shelter work for 22 years, all at the Animal Rescue League, and just the evolution from where the shelters have come is just amazing to me and so neat for the cats. But it is exactly right. These community cat rooms that are now being set up in shelters, the Animal Rescue League has them. Lots of shelters around the country have them and are getting them, are awesome. I mean, basically you're taking these cats and you're putting them into little mini communities of, you know, 5 or 7 or 10 cats in some of these rooms who haven't met before. So you're picking out cats to get them introduced that, you know, you think will be a good connection. And those cats actually form relationships among those little communities they have. And then as they get adopted, you add to the community. But the cats, you just see such an emotional shift with these cats, most of these cats that really get that opportunity to, you know, have other cats around them and do that natural cat behavior, grooming each other, you know, playing with each other. And just the emotional life of those cats and in those situations and in the shelter are amazing. And even the individual cages that now exist in shelters, and the Animal Rescue League has some, of course, for some cats that maybe don't necessarily love to play all the time and that sort of thing. But those even now have, you know, shelves, or you have the ability with the size of them and their build to put in boxes that allow the cats to go and be hanging in a box. And then, you know, if somebody comes up to see them, they can come out of the box and come see the person, but they still have that escape to go hide back in their box if they want. And it just, all of that makes them so much more emotionally healthy and thus much more adoptable to people.
Well, and I think it also demonstrates the social nature of cats. And I've always lived in a multiple cat household, mm-hmm. so I've seen that my whole life. But I think a lot of people have had only cats and they haven't seen cats together. But that is really striking when you look at these cat communities.
Oh, it is amazing. I could sit in front of those and just watch these cats and their interaction for hours if I had the, you know, luxury to do that. But that is exactly right. And, you know, everyone who hears me ever talk or say anything, I'm a huge proponent of at least double cat households, if not more, multiple. And a lot of people laugh when I say that because they think, of course, I'm, you know, a cat pusher and I'm pushing them to adopt more cats from the Animal Rescue League or any shelter. I tell people that any shelter adopt from. But it's really because of the, you know, total social nature of these animals and the happiness that they get from each other and being around each other. And it's, you know, all you have to do is watch it and you see just how important that is to those cats.
Well, and in the cat book, you go through different breeds of cats, although again, as a person who's adopted a lot of cats over the years, I find that to be a little less important in the cat world than it is in the dog world. But what kind of advice do you give people about picking the right cat for them?
You know, the best advice I can give to somebody who's got other resident cats at home is to be sure and pick one that is, you know, close in age and somewhat personality of the cats that you've got in your home. I can best illustrate that with giving you a bad example of somebody who had a 16-year-old cat at home and decided to get it a friend and went and got a 7-week-old kitten. And the 16-year-old cat, the last thing it wanted to do was to play with a 7-week-old kitten and have this kitten attacking it all the time for fun and entertainment. So gender is just not an issue with cats. Doesn't matter if it's a male or a female. But the big issue with the cat is somewhat close in age or, you know, segment of their life and in somewhat of their personality.
We had a call earlier and they couldn't stay with us about introducing cats. And you just brought it up there because sometimes it can be challenging to introduce another cat, whether it's a kitten or an adult cat, to the household. What kind of advice do you give to people when they're adopting an additional cat?
Yes, you know, and I'm glad you asked about this because this is something that I am just absolutely, you know, think is so important when people adopt a cat or get another cat. And it's just to have some patience, because what we really want you to do is to take the new cat and separate them out. It's a great thing, too, to just kind of let that cat have a little bit of chill time in another room. But you set up, you know, a room with a litter box and food and water, and you let them chill there for a few days. And then we're going to start some scent transfer. And, you know, you probably read in the book, there's a whole bunch in there about, you know, taking bath towels and rubbing them on both cats and then switching the cats out of the rooms. And then, you know, kind of getting in a situation with either baby gates or screen doors or something where you can, you know, play with these cats on both sides and treat when everything's good. And it is a whole process. And it sounds very, you know, time consuming, and it sounds very, you know, that you have to put a lot of engagement into it to do it. It's absolutely worth every minute you do it, because what will happen is you do this longer introduction process and these cats will have some sort of positive living arrangement going forward. In other words, they may not ever be the best friends where they groom each other and sleep together and everything else, but they will be able to coexist together in a peaceful way if you do this introduction process correctly. So I'm really, you know, think that is one of the most important things somebody can do. And that introduction can take, you know, a day for some cats, and it can take, you know, a month or two for some cats. So, and I've had that experience myself. I've got 6 cats right now. I've been up to 8, and there's one cat I got introduced to my home in 2 days, and there's a cat that I got introduced to our home in 2 months. And it just is just dependent upon those cats, but it's all worth it with that slow, slow introduction process.
And I hear the message there just to be patient, because they're going to deal with it. You know, and maybe this is anthropomorphizing. I have a 14-year-old dog, and we got a puppy this spring. And we have another dog in the middle who really needed a playmate, because the older dog really stopped playing with him. And so the puppy was strategic in that way. But, of course, the 14-year-old, she likes to yell at the puppy. and as I'm already anthropomorphizing, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. She does seem to enjoy yelling at the puppy, and she's always been a little bit of a grump. And with cats, sometimes I see the older cats swat the kitten, and I think, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing for either one of them.
No, I agree with you. You know, in general terms, you know, if you do the kind of right match, and it's always going to depend upon, you know, what your older cat is like. And, you know, I can't speak to the dog part of it because I don't want to say anything that wouldn't be right and project onto the dogs. But from the cat standpoint, if, you know, it does depend on the older cat's personality. I mean, I also have older cats, and I've brought in younger cats, and you know, my older cat will thump my younger cat, and it's been a good teaching tool in that element. But I do know my cats, and I do know that I took a slow introduction process in doing all of this and bringing them in. And, you know, they work it out, and they might thump each other, but, you know, it's probably good training for the little one. So there's a lot of patience with the introduction part, and there's also the knowing your own pets.
Right.
And you know, that's an important thing, and most people, when they have, you know, pets and they've formed a bond with them, they know them pretty well, you know, to know, okay, that's good, or that's, you know, over the top, and now we need some help.
And Charity, as you know, we certainly get pets that are coming into us days old, weeks old, And Paula and Carol have always emphasized the importance of actually, whenever possible, is having those youngsters actually raised by surrogates so that they are learning dog language and they're learning cat language, and it makes all the difference in the world later on.
Sure. And explain a little bit for people who might not understand that. Why? What would be the difference between a dog that, you know, a puppy that comes in and is bottle fed by a person, or a puppy that gets an opportunity and only interacts with people, or a puppy that gets an opportunity to interact with older dogs?
Well, just to use your example of your older dog, is your oldest dog a female?
Yes.
And that is kind of the perfect situation for your puppy, because the male dogs tend to not correct puppies. They don't teach them. They're too tolerant. But the female dogs seem to be best at it. So what your female dog was doing was putting some boundaries on that puppy, which is definitely what they need. They need to honor the older dogs. They need to give them space, read their body language, that kind of thing. When we have orphans that come in, or literally just litters or puppies, sometimes we'll even have singleton puppies that come in, no mom, no history, no nothing, and we want them to be raised in a family, in a foster home, basically with other dogs. And we have several foster homes that are very experienced with this. If they miss out on that early socialization with other dogs, other pets, even other people, they become fearful, they become shy, and lots of times that will actually turn into what looks like or is aggression, biting to defend themselves because they're so afraid. The other thing with puppies, if they don't stay with a litter or don't stay with some dog who is going to teach them better, they start biting. About seven and eight weeks, they start biting. And if they're with their litter mates, the litter mates go, oh, say, we're not going to play that way. I'm going to walk away, or I'm going to bite you back. You're going to learn that biting too hard doesn't work. But if they grow up by themselves, and they can't seem to learn that from us humans as well. So lots of times when we have puppies that are biters, or that, I mean, they're playing, but they're just playing so rough that people can't live with them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's the cause.
Well, and I adopted the first dog that I adopted as an adult, and I was living alone with her. I don't think she had been around other dogs much, and I just could not get through to her. And then she spent 3 weeks at my parents' house getting rolled repeatedly by the other dogs, and she was much more receptive after that.
Yeah.
A dominancy display.
Yeah, I get it now.
Right. Oh, that's what you were trying to do. All right, we've got a lot of people who want to ask questions, so we'll get to the phones, and we'll talk more. I want to spend some time talking about dogs and cats and kids here in a moment, because I know that's one of the main reasons that you hear from people for giving up their pets. But before we get to that, let's answer some of these questions. And John is on the line from Fairfield. Hi, John.
Yes, hello. I called in to say something, and then one of your guests just said it, is that I believe for years that if you adopt a pet, you need to adopt two of the same species. Every animal deserves the right to interact with its own species, okay?
All right. Well, John, thank you for sharing that point of view. And I think that brings up an interesting question. A lot of people have single animals and maybe can't have more than one. But sometimes you also see people adopting litter mates. Does that create problems ever? And let's talk about dogs. I think it probably creates fewer problems in the cat's world. Mm-hmm. But Paula, do you see that creating problems for people sometimes when they adopt litter mates?
I have very rarely seen that work. And the reason is that the puppies will tend to bond to each other, get so dependent on each other as companions that they don't bond with their humans. And then down the line, because they're so cute together, people don't start out separating them, taking them for separate walks, separate training classes. They end up so dependent that they literally are traumatized when they're separated for any other particular reason, an injury or illness or anything like that. So that's one reason. But I think for most people, the main reason not to adopt two puppies at the same time is it's like 16,000 times harder to house train them, because one of them is always going at, you know, one time or the other. They're very hard to supervise. They're very hard to get outdoors at the right time. And so it really does make it exponentially more difficult to house train them. It certainly can be done. And I know a lot of trainers that do that's what they want. But if people are doing it because they have two children, so they want two puppies, what I usually recommend is let's get one puppy now. Get it house trained, get it, you know, trained, get the classes, socialization, all that good stuff done. And then in a year, get another puppy for a companion. And that usually works a lot better.
And Tom?
No, Charity, I was just, as things have changed, you know, those people with single dogs, there's now dog parks, too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would say read the book and then take your dog to a dog park.
A great, great suggestion. And Paula, as a dog person myself, I have found it easier to have two mm-hmm. dogs in the house because they keep each other company and they keep each other busy, although we've never adopted two at the same time. Right. Is that something you recommend to people?
Well, it's very, very personal decision. I have had up to three dogs different times, down to one now. But I like two, and I like them to be, like, you've got yours spaced out. That's ideal for me. Because if I get litter mates or puppies or dogs that are kind of similar in age, or if I adopted a dog who's about the same age as the one I have now, and then I'm looking at losing both of them within a certain period of time with each other, that's devastating for me. That's very hard for me. So that's why one of the reasons I try to space out the ages. But it's, you know, it's such an individual. I've known, you've probably heard of R.K. Anderson, who just passed away. He's one of the top board certified animal behaviorists in the world, literally. He invented the Gentle-Eater head collar, and he always only had one cat and one dog at a time. And he told me it was because that's what he wanted to invest his time and effort into, was that one pet. And a lot of people feel that way.
Well, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll talk about cat pairs, Carol, when we get back, because I think it's a very different story with cat pairs, or at least it has been in my experience. I'd love to hear your take on it. We're talking today about dogs and cats. The Animal Rescue League in Des Moines has put out two books, For Love of Dogs and For Love of Cats, to help people through that adoption journey and to help them create happy forever homes for their adopted animals. And we'll take your calls as well. With me, Tom Colvin, director of the Animal Rescue League, Carol Grillion, the president of the board of directors of the Animal Rescue League and their resident cat expert, and Paula Sunday, the resident dog expert at the Animal Rescue League. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guests today are from the Animal Rescue League in Des Moines. They've just released two new books, For Love of Dogs and For Love of Cats, to help people through the adoption process when they adopt a dog, cat, puppy, or kitten from the animal shelter. With me, Tom Colvin, director of the Animal Rescue League, Paula Sunday, the resident dog expert at the Animal Rescue League, and Carol Grillion, who's the cat expert. And Carol, we were just about to get to you before the break. We talked about adopting puppies together, which is not something that Paula recommends. What about litter mates in the cat world?
Definitely. We highly recommend that they adopt two if they're going to get a kitten, or if they're going to get an adult, that they adopt a buddy for it if they don't have another one at home waiting. So, yes, that's been an interesting thing because there are some overlaps between dog and cat behavior that I've, of course, noticed over the years, but this is one where it definitely goes different directions. And so from cats, we do recommend that.
Why is it so beneficial for cats?
You know, for cats, it is, you know, a situation that I think because they don't have to, you know, go outside and be potty trained and all the kind of things that dogs, you know, who are adopted together as litter mates might, you know, be harder to oversee with cats. They really enjoy, and it's been found study after study, you can observe it easily, they really enjoy being able to curl up with each other and sleep, groom each other, play with each other, which is, you know, most of us who get cats realize they sleep, you know, 18 out of 24 hours a day. They don't get a lot of exercise. So it's a great, you know, built-in exercise for a cat in the house, you know, to be able to play with each other and hang together. And it just really gives them, I think, a little bit more of a security for a cat. Although, you know, separate from that, Charity, I've seen a cat and a dog, you know, somebody would have one of each and they become friends also. And I think that from a cat as a species, they just really like some sort of bond and some sort of company to hang with them.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of canine feline friendships over the years. And is that something that people still kind of have a misnomer about? They think that dogs and cats won't get along?
I think absolutely. And looking over at Tom right now, and he's also shaking his head yes to that. So, but you know, I myself have four dogs and six cats, but I could tell you I have a relationship between one of my cats and one of my dogs where they sleep together, they groom each other. They have a very close bond, probably closer bond than this cat has with any of the other cats in the home. So it is totally a misnomer.
Let's get back to some more questions. This is from Julie. She says, my cat is about 13 years old. She stopped grooming herself. She's still eating, peeing, and pooping very little. Sorry to be so graphic. She seems very delicate as I watch her walk gingerly. A couple of weeks ago, she stayed in her litter box, slept there for almost a week. We took her to the vet and had subcutaneous fluids a few times. She got through that. But how do I know if she's in pain? And she says, I've read that cats are very good at masking pain.
Yes, they are. It's one of the, you know, kind of scarier things as us as cat owners have to really watch for. And it's a great question and something we all struggle with as our pets get older. And definitely true with cats masking their pain. But I think the things that she just described in terms of walking gingerly and not leaving her litter box are pure signals that that's something new. In other words, you know, she never used to lay in her litter box or she would not have that ginger walk. And so, you know, those sorts of things are the things that she's picking up on, and those are the sorts of things that say something's not right. And whether you take them to a veterinarian and get that checked, there's, you know, acupuncture for cats. I mean, all sorts of things you can do for your cats. But as they get older, definitely something we need to watch and be more aware of. And knowing our pets, like we were talking about earlier, really helps to be able to identify those times when you need to step in and help. And the cat not grooming itself is also another sign.
Charity, I think what kind of throws people a little bit, and I'm certainly not going to get graphic on this, but we certainly have to pick up very injured animals. And we have received cats, you know, badly injured, and they're purring. And so I think that, you know, that's what kind of throws people off. It certainly has a different message within the cats. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Calming itself is what we thought. You know, I think that kind of throws people off.
Right. They think if they're purring, they're okay.
Yeah, right.
There's another question here that gets to a topic that I want to spend quite a bit of time on, because you mentioned earlier that a lot of people will get rid of their pet when a baby is on the way. And this is from Cliff in Iowa City. He says, our household already has a baby and an 8-year-old neutered cat. We'd like to add a dog. What advice do you have for making a smooth transition? Our baby has already started grabbing at the cat, and we worry this could be a problem with a new dog. Paula, you want to start that off?
I'm sitting here debating. I honestly would really recommend that they wait till the baby's mobile. I mean, 2 to 4 years old, and they've had a chance to teach it appropriate interactions with the pets. Because even trying to bring a puppy in there, puppies grow so much faster than the baby. That's, you know, that's kind of the old thinking is I'll get a puppy to grow up with my child. And it's like, well, in a year, the puppy is full grown and the child is barely bigger. So it's very dependent on the particular animal, the particular dog. So some dogs can walk into a situation like that. Hi, kitty. Hi, baby. Loves babies. So when you're bringing a dog home or you're looking for a dog to bring into a family situation, you do want to look for a pet, a dog that is nuts in love with children even more than the adults, that is solicits their attention, solicits their presence. And those are not the most common dogs out there. So I've seen them. They're magic, but they're kind of born, not made. So it's kind of hard to just go out and find one.
Well, and you know, you said there's magic, and there really is magic with kids and dogs, mm-hmm. and kids and cats too. But I wonder if puppies are babies too, you know, and in this email he's talking about the grabbing behavior. Of course, puppies also grab. Is it harder with puppies and little kids than it would be adopting an older dog and little kids?
Well, I think it is harder because the puppies go through this teething stage. It starts about 12 weeks, goes till they're 6 months. So you got 4 months there of mouthing and, you know, sore gums and teeth falling out. And the children have very tender skin. And even a minor mouthing situation can turn into kind of a major scratch for a child. And so children get hurt. They scream. They run. I call it turning into bunnies. They they seem like a prey animal to a puppy or even an adult dog. And so it can cause some trouble. So it takes 100% supervision. A lot of moms just aren't really prepared or want to do that. Because, you know, you can put your child in a crib or a playpen and your puppy in a crate. But if they are both out at the same time, they absolutely have to have somebody literally hovering over them so that there are no mishaps.
So it is really a formative time for both child and
absolutely.
Puppy. And so the family's basically having to do both to
right.
do it right.
What about adding a baby to the family when you already have dogs and cats, Paula?
See, I think that's actually easier because what I – and in the book, I think I have a pretty good chapter on that, literally, because I have so many questions about it. But you get a baby doll. You borrow or buy the smells, the powders, the oils, the creams, whatever you're going to be using with your baby. Loan your blankets to someone who has a child and then get them back not clean so they have the baby smell on them. Carry that baby doll around because your body language changes so much from what you before the baby to after the baby, that can actually be frightening for your dog because all of a sudden your body language is different, you're talking different, you're talking like you used to talk to the dog to the baby now, and the dog can go, what's the deal with this? So we don't want jealousy. We want the dog to understand. I always encourage people to teach a go to your bed cue so that the dog can be out from underfoot. If there's stairs in the home, we want the dog to have a good stay. You stay at the bottom of the stairs till I call you to come upstairs, that kind of thing. Get them used to not being in the baby's room if they're not going to be allowed in there. So, you know, the changes are dramatic, but most of them can be prepared for ahead of the babies
And is it important to make sure that your dog has a place where you don't let the baby go when the baby starts getting mobile?
Very good point. You absolutely do want to have a place, whether it's a crate or a corner, a bed, but especially once the babies are mobile, when the babies are, you know, stationary, you know, usually up until like 10 months or so, depending on the child, the dogs are like pretty okay with that usually. And even a dog who's not been around babies a lot, they're like, okay, they smell kind of interesting. But once they start crawling and they start walking and they start trying to pull themselves up to walk, the dogs can get pretty alarmed. And so you do want to have a place where that dog can go hide out, hang out away from, you know, and the child is literally taught when the puppy's here, he's in his nap time and he can't go, you know, pull on his hair.
See, Charity, I tell you, even though I'm not planning on adding a child to our home, it makes me want to go back and reread Paula's chapter about that. It's very interesting.
There is a lot of good information in there. And honestly, again, in my experience, it was not that hard to add kids to a family of dogs and cats. But mm-hmm. I know, Carol, I think there are probably more people, maybe I'm wrong about this, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think there are more people who give up cats when a baby's on the way even than dogs. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I would think so, actually, yes. And, you know, this is one area where things you can do for a dog, you know, as Paula was just describing, are absolutely things that will help with bringing a baby into a home where there's a cat or cats. So those things mirror each other a lot in ways you can get your cat used to a new baby coming in the home. And the cats are so driven to smell and sense that if you can get past some of that stuff, you know, all smooth sailing.
Cats do not suck the breath
they
out of
not.
Babies.
Yeah. They do not.
But there are a few things that also are in the book to be careful about that, babies smell like milk and
they're warm, a nice, cozy, warm
place for the cat to curl up on. So, you know, there's also things in the book about that.
There's a whole section, designated to that just because it is such an important thing. And because it is, you know, we all kind of giggle about it, but it is actually very true that there are still those myths out there about cats, you know, wanting to suck the breath out of newborns and suffocate and all that sort of thing. And there just are no, you know, documented cases of that happening. That's not what the cat's intention is to do when they're getting in the crib. They want to curl up. They want to lay next to this warm, good smelling thing, you know. So we can easily, you know, help to make those adds to the family happen and be able to still keep the cat.
Well, I made a behavior change on my part once my daughter was born, and that's that I started shutting the bedroom door at night because I have a cat who will sleep on my neck.
Yeah.
And I was concerned that he would also sleep on the baby's neck, and he never tried.
Definitely. one of the best tips I got this and I've used this a ton over the last 15 years when I've been working with people on this exact subject is a friend of mine had actually, and this is talked about in the book, you know, had gotten a screen door and they actually took down the door of the baby's room, actually mounted the screen door that they'd gotten and put it up until the baby was, you know, old and old enough now, the crib, they could then see and hear into the baby's room with no problem whatsoever, but the cat could not get in there and could not get into the crib. And, you know, I've used that a lot. I know I have a lot of people that have done that over the years, and it's just worked really, really well. But it's simple things like that where we can keep the baby safe and we can keep the cats in the homes.
Is that something with cats that you hear from people a lot? Not about with their children, but just my cat disturbs my sleep.
Oh,
all the time.
Definitely. And usually when I talk to the people, what has happened is the people have actually, you know, allowed it to happen or trained the cat, you know, in a way like, you know, boy, my cat's bugging me at night at 4 o'clock in the morning because it wants food. Okay, what do you do? Well, I get up and get it some food. Okay, well, now that you've just trained your cat, come in and get you up at 4 o'clock in the morning and you'll get some food. So, you know, it's a lot of what we as humans have done to, you know, perpetuate that behavior in our cats. And so, you know, we can easily fix those things with a little bit of, you know, firmness by those humans not to get up at 4 o'clock and feed their cats. So.
And it's okay to shut the bedroom door?
It is okay to shut the bedroom door. You know, I don't know what yours do, but when I shut the bedroom door, mine starts pounding on the outside of the door. So I have a whole process I have to do with putting pillows in between the door and the cat. And it's, you know, it's very...
And why do they pound on the door?
Very complex. They pound on the door because I open the door and let them in. So they've trained me as well. So, but yes.
Even happens to the best.
Even the cat behavior people have cat behavior problems at home. So.
Yeah, my oldest cat jiggles doorknobs. To
yes,
get
there you go.
Which is a very effective tool as well. We don't really have time to get into it too much, but you mentioned litter box behavior and that there are a lot of fixes for litter box behavior, and you dedicate a whole chapter of the book to that, which is incredibly useful for anyone who has lived with cats for a long time. But can you give me just a thumbnail sketch of how to evaluate the problem if your cat has started going to the bathroom outside the litter box?
Absolutely. In a very short thing on a very large subject, basically over the years I have taken all the different calls and put them into categories, and they basically fall into one of 10 different reasons a cat will quit using its litter box. And I do outline those in our book. They're also on our website at www.arl-iowa.org. And you can basically walk down that as a worksheet and go, okay, I do that. Yep, I have that. Yes, I have a covered litter box that sits in the middle of the room versus in a corner so they feel like they can't get out. And usually if you can make an adjustment, and sometimes it's more than one of those things, but if you can make an adjustment little by little, we will get those problems fixed. So it's one of the biggest sadnesses, I guess, for me working in cat behavior and shelter work is to see all of these cats that come into shelters that are, you know, don't use their litter box supposedly or in that particular instance. And it's very sad to me because it can be fixed. So, you know, I encourage anyone who has a cat, has questions about litter box, I'd read it early. I mean, I encourage people to learn about that stuff even now when they're not having any trouble because there are cats that will use their litter box for years and years and years and years with patiently waiting for something to change and it doesn't, and then they'll start breaking litter box. So it's great information to have. It's definitely a fixable problem. If people have it, I strongly encourage them to get a hold of a shelter or a behavior person or somebody that can help them, because small adjustments can fix that problem and keep those pets in the home.
And the line that really stood out to me was, the cat is not peeing in anger.
Absolutely.
Which it can feel that way. It really can.
It can. And I hear that a lot. And I understand how people feel that way. It's just that's not what's going on. So your cat's not mad at you. It's communicating with you. It's not liking something about its litter box. It's got a health thing. But it can be fixed.
All right. And Tom, I'll give you the last word today for people who have never thought about going to an animal shelter and have thought that, you know, these are damaged animals and I don't want to adopt one of these animals. What do you want them to know?
We want them to know that is not – nothing could be farther from the truth. We have the most wonderful pets for adoption. If they need validation to it, our dogs have been search and rescue dogs that have been adopted from us, you know, drug dogs, agility champions, all of these different types of things. Our cats have won, you know, cat shows, household cat shows. Go to your animal shelter, check out rescues. Let's get these animals out of shelters, out of rescues, and into people's homes.
All right. Tom Colvin, thank you very much. Tom Colvin is the director of the Animal Rescue League. Also with me today, Carol Grillion, the resident cat expert, and Paula Sunday, the resident dog expert. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
And the new books are called For Love of Dogs and For Love of Cats. There's also a training DVD included with the dog book. You can find out more on our Facebook page, Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance from Caitlin Fry today. Technical support from John Pemble. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow is Horticulture Day. This is Talk of Iowa.